Franzo.
What's happening, dude?
I'm pretty excited to be talking to you right now. I mean, as we discussed last week, this is, you know, the time when everyone's beginning to finally hunker down for the holidays and, you know, they're getting their last-minute shopping done. But soon, hopefully by the time this podcast goes up on the air, everyone's going to be snuggled in with their families, and the magic guys out there, my fans, your fans, our friends, are going to be sitting at home looking for ways to delve into magic and practice and focus. Because for me, I don't know about you, but one of the awesomest parts of the holidays used to be posting up by the fireplace with my deck of cards and my expert card technique or something like that. And really just getting some serious, not school-based practice time.
Yeah, you're always hoping that Christmas morning you're going to get the newest edition of Pallbearers or something cool like that that you put on your wish list. And all my relatives, all my family members were always like, why do I have to call this weird H&R Magic Book place and order my gifts?
All I got.
Why do I have to talk to this weird guy named Denny?
All I got was a Rocker Bomber book.
A Rocker Bomber.
That was like a little take on the old Peanuts thing. You know, the funniest thing that ever happened to me in the category of trying to take a layperson who needed to help me get some magic into a weird situation. We went to New York once with a theater teacher of ours to go see a bunch of theater and sort of traipse around the city once when I was in the 8th or 9th grade. And I'll never forget my teacher, who's a fellow great teacher, English teacher, named Mr. McDermott. I wanted to do what every young magician wants to do when he first goes to New York. Can you tell me what it is? I wanted to go to Tannen's.
Go to Tannen's, yeah.
Right. I had my Tannen's catalog. And, you know, I was so excited to go to Tannen's. And I won't talk exactly about how that trip went entirely. You know, they're under new management since then. But I will say that... I will never forget, because I wasn't aware of all the entendres in the world and I wasn't aware of what everything meant that I was saying. I just remember looking at the advertisements in my Magic magazine for Gaffed coins from the Johnson Coin Company. This was back before our friend Todd was in business selling coins, and if you wanted to get...
Yeah, back when Caveny made Gaffed coins.
Right, back when a smoke was a smoke and Groovin' was Groovin' at the Club Cherry Bomb. And so I remember going up to my teacher in the middle of this Broadway play, showing him my catalog and saying, look, you must take me to Tannen's to get a Precision Johnson. And the teacher looked at me. He didn't know what I was
talking about.
Right. I mean, all you could see on the page was a coin, right? I was like, I need to get one of these Precision Johnsons. And he said, so let me get this straight. I'm taking you to a magic shop to buy you a Precision Johnson? I don't think so, brah. I don't know what you're talking about, but the answer is nay.
I lost a great gaffed coin. I lost a great gaffus around the corner from Tannen's. You were there,
I think.
Oh, my
God, you know.
You were there.
You know, we had such a fun time with Jeff Latta that night, and it's so sad that he's gone now and he left us. But I have to tell you, I don't think it besmirches his memory to share this story at all. Because it was...
No, it's kind of funny. Like, when it happened, I thought it was funny. It was funny to see, like, the way everybody reacted.
It was hilarious on every level. I mean, I don't know about you, but this was... it was a very exciting night for me because I sort of felt like we were in the groove with a whole different generation. And I felt in some way were as cohesive as we were. You know, they were their own crew and we were our own crew. This was the night, folks, that Nathan and I and Lee, Asher, went to New York to help open the new Tannen show. So this was back when we shared the bill with Chris Angel. And we lectured in the
space. Right.
It really happened. Really happened. And we and we lectured.
There was and a bunch of teenage girls.
And we decided to go out that night. We made plans to go out for drinks with Jeff Latta and David Roth. And for me, this was...
Doug Edwards was on that lineup, too.
Doug Edwards was on the lineup. He wasn't at the Hang for dinner, though.
Right, right. No, yeah, he wasn't at the hang. I was just trying to remember who else was there. That was crazy, yeah.
So it was crazy. And so all I remember was that night as we were leaving the deli, it was late at night, we were walking up the street, and Lee and I were talking a little bit with Roth, and in typical old-school magician style, Lotta pulls Nathan back, because I believe Jeff felt like Nathan was a true coin man and could appreciate, you know, his secrets, you know. And so he literally, in traditional New York classy style.
I think he just wanted to bum a cigarette, actually.
Is that true?
No, I'm hoping it was just the latter.
Okay, that's why they call him Jeffrey Ladder. And yes, I actually think what I'm saying it was true, because at the time I remember Lee and I not only laughing, but David Roth laughing and going, ah, oh, God bless those kids. And so the funny thing was, now we're walking up the street, and Roth calls without looking over his head, like he's got Coin Man sonar. Don't do that. Don't do that magic over the subway grate. Now, Lotta apparently had just borrowed your special coin, right?
Yeah, it was like a new gaff that I had gotten from Mr. Lassen.
Right, but it wasn't just a gaff. I mean, this was like a silver dollar that fell apart
I think it was actually a new, like, magnetic sun and moon, you know, very, very nice, expensive coin.
Right, completely custom. Nothing about it, even vaguely, that you could ever replace or get again. You know, the coins were yours, right, and they were made around your coins and your concept, and they were just beautiful. And so Lada's like, oh, you know, hey, I got something to show you with that. Let me see that kid. And just like, you know, anyone would if they're with one of their elders, and this is how we learn magic, as you all know. If you're back in the old days, before you could accost your favorite magic star on the internet, whether you were cool or not, you had to be nice to people. Am I right, Nathan?
Right, yeah. It was one of those moments where, no, you know, I was enjoying it, and I was more than honored to let him handle those coins.
Of course, right? Yes, sir. Here, have the coin. And so Roth goes, don't use that coin over the subway grate. And Lotta calls to us across a long avenue city block. He calls out, I know what the hell I'm doing. You know, just, you know, card guys, just keep walking. Keep walking. And so Roth just
He handled it like a scotch and soda.
And how do you mean? You mean like very casually, effortlessly?
Well, he gave it a little bang. Like he was trying to, like, you know, get the insert out. I was like, ah, you don't need to, ooh. Yeah.
What is this, 2.0? What year is this? He was confused. And so then all we know is...
It rolled, too. That was the worst part. It didn't just drop into the grate. It rolled for a while, like the slow motion coin roll.
You see, we didn't see that. All we know is we're walking up the street away having a conversation, and about just a few moments after, Roth has laid out his warning and we've been yelled at from Lotta from across the avenue. We hear you guys go, "Oh!"
And Roth went nuts.
Roth went nuts.
He was like, he was like, "Oh my gosh." And he was like, I just remember, like, he put his hands on his head and he was like, he couldn't believe he just seen.
Well, it was too perfect. I mean, for us, it was really like a wonderful bit of Keystone coppery. And, you know, Lee and I were having a hard time not, like, I don't want to say peeing ourselves, but it was pretty funny. And I don't think.
Yeah, because. He was so apologetic and he felt so bad, and he was literally like on his knees trying to like look in the grate for the coin, and I'm like, right, you know, don't worry about it. And there's like at that same time a homeless guy walked over. Do you remember that? No. And he's like, I'll help you. Would you lose? I'll help you. And then it just got really weird, and I was like, we better leave. We better go find another bar.
And what I love about this is I'm pretty sure like when a New Yorker who's like in his 40s is like on his hands and knees looking down the subway grate or whatever it is, you know, grate. You got to know it's not coming back.
There was so many classic lines from that night, and most of them were from Roth.
Do you remember like one more that won't get us in trouble with Roth or one of his minions? I'm sorry. I don't know if David's like, you know, I don't know if he carries minions, but, you know. I just want to make sure. You know what I'm saying. You know what's interesting about Minions? Here's what I've been thinking about Minions, you know. Because ever since, you know, you're a little magician.
Do I have one of the full-flavored ones?
Well, when you're a kid, you know, not when you're a kid, but, like, you know, the idea, you know, you want to be a big magician, you'd like to have Minions. I mean, you know, Jeff McBride's got Minions, am I right? But I've been thinking, going back to some of my religious training as a young boy growing up before my bar mitzvah, and I know for a fact that a Minion is 10 grown men. Of course.
I had no clue. That's
right.
Great.
Yeah, so what that means is you need 10 people in the room, a minion, to have a service. So I always thought that's great because now if you have 10 fans, you can say, look, you guys stand over there. That's one minion. Okay? And now you get another 10 fans, right? You put them on the other side of the room, and you can literally say now – that you have minions, and you can send your minions forth.
I'm so excited. I never knew what that meant.
Right. One toady does not equal a minion. You see what I mean?
No.
A toady is a toady. 10 toadies to one minion.
Well, usually you say minions, too. It's not like I have a minion. So usually when people have minions, they've got at least 20.
Well, you see, 20 minions, right? But you see, they don't mean that. Minions, that's what I'm saying. I think many times, like I think when Bill Gates says he's sending...
It's like we're running 10 deep. That's what they're saying.
Right. They're saying we're, right, a phalanx. We fight as a unit. We're here to defeat the people for Sparta, you know, by minions. But I'm saying technically I could send to you two groups of 10 dudes and they would be technically minions. So, okay, this is good. So we have one fellow, Fast Jimmy, here on Twitter, who says, I think we're lubed up now. I want to get to some serious content with you and get your information on some useful magic for these folks before the holidays get here.
Yeah, there's a couple of other people on Twitter that were asking, that were making some questions and statements, so we can acknowledge some of those if you want, if you've got a couple.
Yeah, I completely do. Okay, here's one from Keith Brown. Young Keith Brown, who I think we know is a camper at the Sorcerer Safari Summer Camp, who says...
hey, Keith.
Is it true Kranzo can shoot a party popper full of streamers out of his bum? If so, where's the video? Hashtag podcast controversies.
Oh, jeez. That's awesome. I have several methods. I have several methods, and one of them is actually on video. It's on... I can find the link and we'll provide it somehow. But if you go to if you actually go to the easiest way to find it is to go to the what's the St. Louis Midwest Magic Jubilee. Go to their Facebook page and it's posted on their page.
Now, do you have any of the work on this particular bit in your new comedy book that you did?
Yeah. Well, I have, like I mentioned, I played with the idea of, you know, just making it appear like it's coming out your butt, you know, for a while, and just trying out different ways to do it. And I basically put, you know, what I think is the easiest and most practical way to do it. You know, that's one of the methods that's published in the new book. And there's a video of me doing, using a different method that Sean Begonia actually created. It's one that involves servos, and I'm kind of scared of it, but it works.
Are you telling me that Sean Begonia has a method to pop stuff out of your butt that uses servos? That's sleight of hand information you can get here at Aaron Fisher Magic, kids.
Controversy.
And servos. Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So tell me this. How many get different gags are in the new book?
There are actually more than 36 because there's a couple of extra hidden ones, but technically I say there's 36.
And just so you folks know, my friend Nathan here literally thinks up gags and bits – like faster than most people can even think up magic or anything like it. In fact,
there's a lot to hit the cutting room floor, I think, like anybody else. But these are ones that I've actually, you know, I've done and used, and some people have actually seen me use a lot of them.
Do you do your tail bit in there? Tails?
Yeah, that's in there. Yep, that's in there. And I do like the frisbee gag, and I know you've seen me do a couple of the other ones. Like the cell phone gag and the lint roller gag. And
I want to warn folks, you know, I mean, Nathan is literally one of the funniest magicians I know. He's got a style and a manner that really allows him to do these bits of visual comedy magic, these gags, which have a magical element to them, a lot of them, but do them in a sort of whimsical way that really, for me, is genuinely very, very funny. I feel a little bit like this book is almost like Keith Field's Heckler book or or like a bag of rich holiday candy, where you really want to choose these puppies one at a time, because I can see the big mistake someone will make is they will put all 36 of them in their show instantaneously and right. and conceivably wreck the whole machine, you know.
I think one of the difficult things about the book is just to have the self-control to, like you said, just, you know, take one thing and just see if you can make it work. Because that's, you know, it might not fit your personality and your character, you know. But I think a lot of these things are very, they're kind of customizable.
Well, they certainly are. I mean, but, you know, you have to learn how to work them. It's just, I know this, is that right. for most of us, using gags within the context of our performance is really a delicate matter, because gags and there's nothing goofy or fun happening, and things need to lighten up, and too many gags and the magic becomes silly and clownish, and it's hard to find anything sticky. And I think
the best thing to do is to just kind of use it to kind of make it all stick together. Like Billy McComb, he's a perfect example. He would just kind of, he would do some great effects, but he would use those gags to kind of keep his show moving along and keep the laughs coming.
Wow, talk about another old friend that I missed this Christmas. You know, it was
awesome.
It was such a treat getting to work at the Magic Castle so much and really get to actually sort of work with Billy, to be in the showrooms and hang out at the bar and just, you know, it made me feel like a real professional magician getting to hang with Billy while we were, you know, talking about magic and just sort of haunting the theater like that. And it was a lot of fun.
That's super cool.
Last
time I was at the castle, he was there, and he kind of, I felt like he was almost like, he was like the guy, you know, like if it would have been 20 years earlier, it would have been Vernon, but like that time, that day, it was Billy, you know?
Oh, and it was Billy kind of every day for the first 8 years I was at the Magic Castle. I mean, you know who the professor is, you know? God, can you imagine how terrible it must be to get really old in magic and look around the room and not being able to spot the professor?
Yeah, no shit.
It means you're it. Oy vey.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like being able to spot the sucker. Hey, here's a question from someone that's really interesting. And this was a question from Brandon Wayne, and he wanted to know about any thoughts on making your magic seem like real magic. Now, my response to that, quickly, is that I think in some ways you don't have to worry about that in and of itself. I think you just worry about every little detail of making the effect as strong and clear as you possibly can. And that sort of magical, alchemical vibe sort of begins to sort of just appear and take shape in the gelling, almost like after you put some jello in the fridge. That's how I tend to look at it. What do you think?
No, I agree with everything you said. I think it has a lot to do with, you know, if you've chosen the right effect and you've created the, you know, right presentation, and you've really focused on, like you said, just getting the effect across and kind of being in the moment, then I think everything else will just kind of fall into place as long as that effect is clear, you know, as long as it's understood and you're not jumbling it with too much visual noise or presentation or anything else you can jumble it with, you know.
Well, you know, I've been giving a lot of these online Skype lessons this last couple of weeks. We started the beta program for my online training program at AaronFisherMagic.com. Personal coaching. You just click personal coaching. And
so cool.
It is cool, and it's been working great. But one of the interesting things about that is, you know, these students are completely confused about how to bridge the gap from the luck or lack of luck they're having working on a sleight or a trick or putting it all together. And the gap between that and the real magic that they actually want to create is so big that they're terrified to even do it. And I think for guys like you and me, we were fortunate enough to dig in so hard and deep that by the time we even looked up, it was 5 years later and some of the hard parts were already over. Or at least I did. It was relentless. But you have to remember, we didn't have the internet and we didn't have all of these pseudo easy things there supposedly making it so easy for us. No one ever lied to us and told it was going to be that easy. They just said, there's the books. Good luck. Learn them or don't.
Sure.
And so that's what we had to do. And I think in some ways that gave us a more realistic idea about what was coming. But what I've noticed when I work with these students, and this has been happening routinely with these students is Skype is ideally suited to work, obviously, with the camera. So I'm looking at your hands. So you might think that elements of presentation and misdirection and focus are less suited to working on the little screen like that. But what's beautiful about technique, and this is sort of my answer to the Twitter question as well, is that technique enables all things. When you don't know where to start, you can start with technique. And by the process of putting the techniques together and putting the trick together, just by working on making every single element of that work, they branch out and force you to address one at a time all those other issues of misdirection and focus and magical. You don't have to worry about making your magic magical. You just have to worry about selling this vanish, making this change believable. You have to do it literally effect by effect, moment by moment, until you've sewn this tapestry like a loom over and over and over again until eventually it's not transparent anymore and it starts to look like a big weighty sort of fabric that you could wrap yourself up in. And I think for so many of us, it really all just comes down to picking something to learn and really learning the hell out of it, you know?
Yeah, it's got to be like something that you can do, you know, while you're doing something else, pretty much. Like you can recite, you know, the capitals of all the states while you're performing it. You know, it's got to be second nature.
I have students who literally have been doing magic and buying books and reading books and learning tricks for 10 years that don't feel comfortable until they start to work with me. They don't feel comfortable even having a card selected and found. They just don't know, they don't feel comfortable doing it. And so the question is, why are we working on all of these crazy sleights when what we really need to worry about is drilling the overhand shuffle in such a way that you love to use it, that you love to use it, like your Swiss Army knife, until you know how to open cans with it and kill bad guys with it and make love with it and well, I guess that's too much, and scale fish with it. And so the point is, when you have one of these moves, you can really use it so well. I never understand why everyone's in such a hurry not to use the overhand shuffle, for example, which I know is completely off topic, and I guess it's just because I was teaching it to someone earlier today, and I'm obsessed with it because I'm crazy. Uh-huh. But I think
I use
what?
I use it.
It's the overhand shuffle control, man. There's no more natural thing that you can even do. You know?
Yeah.
So you've been doing a lot.
If you need someone in deck of cards, give it a quick shuffle, you know?
Right, unless you're on the other side of the world, in which case they'll do something that looks like a Hindu shuffle, but in that case, what can you do? You're already screwed.
And if you call the Hindu shuffle and perform it, sometimes it's awkward.
I wouldn't even say sometimes. I think it's the awkward by definition. It's pretty funny. So have you been doing a lot of shows this Christmas?
Yeah, you know, I just did one for that was really interesting a couple nights ago for the Jeffrey Figer party. I don't know why I had to mention who it was, but it was just interesting because.
And can we find more information at jeffreyfiger.biz?
It's like 1-800-CALL-SAM, right? But yeah, it's this time of year. 'Tis the season for Christmas parties and odd. Very, very over-the-top, high-end private events.
Mm-hmm. And so you're doing a fair amount of those this year?
Yeah, you know, that's the one of my favorite things to do because you get to generally perform for people that are in a festive and good mood and they want to be entertained. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, holiday parties are always kind of the easiest shows because they always go the same way. Everyone comes in and they get so blisteringly drunk that, generally speaking, entertaining for them is not that problematic. And even if you're terrible, entertaining for them is not that problematic.
No, it certainly can, you know, backfire if you're going on too late in the evening. But as a general rule, I like to make sure that I come in there early. And if they're a little bit tipsy, that's when I like to hit them, you know. They're just getting there, you know.
So if they're
getting their wheels turned.
So if their events from 7 to 10, I'm just going to, you know, we're going to plug you for professional. I want to make sure anyone
listens. Give me during the cocktail hour. Give me during the cocktail hour. That's the perfect time.
Right. About halfway in, though, right? I mean, you don't like that first 10 minutes of the cocktail hour.
I mean, honestly, I'm always doing after dinner, so I don't really get to choose, you know, when it is. I'm kind of usually falling to the mercy of the event. But yeah, you know, they're usually pretty fun because of, like you said, everybody's just there and usually the boss is paying for everything, and they're more than happy to eat that fat, juicy steak and drink that gin and tonic.
I sort of feel like that's definitely their opportunity, because in many cases, this is the bonus, or there wasn't going to be a bonus, and this is it. And they're like, whatever I can get out of this company in cocktails, and, you know, and if I can berate this magician for the next hour and drink these cocktails, I'm ready to party.
Exactly.
Now, is there a certain rate that they can pay that you'll allow them to tar and feather you?
Tar and feather me?
Well, you know, the boss abuses them all year long, and this is their opportunity to party a little bit. So I'm guessing, what could be better than this happened to me. This has happened. I know this has happened to you a few times, although you don't want to, you know. I just had this image of a Christmas party I did several years ago pop into my head. And this will happen occasionally. You'll get paid top dollar. You'll be getting several thousand dollars to go do some lovely event for the loveliest people. And, you know, you're here to make them feel exciting for the next few hours. And you go to the show. And they go, oh, the show's in here. And then they literally throw you into a room with, like, 30 kids and a nanny.
Right, yeah. Used to happen. You know, not anymore.
And you're sitting there with the 30 kids and the nanny going, you know.
Now I just carry my sock and I go, homie, don't play that. And I smack them.
Oh, I thought you were going to at least make a puppet out of the sock, you know. So what are you going to be practicing this Christmas? You going to have any time? I'm going to be practicing changing diapers, Aaron. Thanks for asking, dude.
Pretty much.
What are you going to be working on?
Need any practice.
You don't need any practice?
Nope. I've got it mastered.
I'll send you a copy of my new book that you can you've got the diaper changing practice. I will send you a copy of The Graduate if I didn't already for you. The card that rises up through the deck, you know, the thing that's been out now.
I've seen it do it a million times. It's awesome. Well, not actually a million, but I've seen you do it several dozen times. And every time I've seen you do it, I just love watching people react to it because they're like, wow, that's cool. And then they have that other look on their face like, ah, wow, that's a great solution too. So it's like a double whammy.
Well, that's weird because you must be performing for the magicians. Oh, you mean you had that look on your face like, hey, great solution. Right. Or as you used to say, when the magician sees the effect and they go, marvelous.
No, like when you – I've seen you teach it to a few people and they're like, ah, yes.
It is
so it's,
clever,
you know,
for sure.
It looks good and it feels
good. Yeah, it looks good. It feels good. I think, it's very interesting. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what everyone thinks of it. Peter Duffy wrote me an email, said he thought it was the best version that he'd seen of it in print, which I personally I was kind of bummed because that means he can't review it now because he sent me a quote. It's like, darn! Should have asked him to review
that's
it.
That's too bad.
That's
Duffy's
okay.
Cool, man. He's got that Card Magic USA book. It's coming out. You can get it from fansofmagic.com.
And you've got stuff in that. And Lee's got stuff in that. And that's going to be good stuff. And I didn't get a chance to put something in it. But I've been kicking myself because I feel like, you know, I should have participated.
We'll send you a copy. We'll figure out a way for you to get a copy somehow.
So, and now we come, I think, to the biggest part of this little discussion.
Did you have any more Twitters or Facebooks?
Not any new
or is that
ones,
what you were getting?
because the problem is we're not going live in the middle of a show, so we've got the bunch that came in, but I did.
Well, I had a couple people say things on Facebook. I didn't know if you had anybody else.
No, anything you got, you can share with us. But if not, I was going to move on to asking you about the most important topic that I think we have to go over before we wrap this up. And this is really serious. This is the question of Jeff Bridges, Tron, reboot.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's gonna be. I would have went tonight, but I knew it would be crazy tonight, so I'm gonna go on Sunday. I think.
I'm thinking so hard about just like I keep saying it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter, and then I'm like completely ready to just like go, like. seriously, there's a decent chance that after I hang up this phone, I'm just going to go see Tron. Because
If I was there, I'd go with you.
I'm not even vaguely in control of my own actions. You have a Tron. I don't think a lot of people...
You would watch Absinthe.
I don't think people understand exactly how young we were when this movie came out.
82, was it?
Right. So I was 6 years old. So I remember being there with my dad and going, what the fuck? What the flarn? You know,
I remember
Bill Cosby himself at that point. So I said, what the flarn?
Sorry. Yeah, I remember being really kind of just like you and, you know, every other kid our age, probably just being really, like, taken by the look of it and all the colors, and it wasn't like anything else we had seen before, you know?
We have another question from Rose Rings that I gotta ask.
Oh, yeah. That's great that you're laughing.
I'm sorry. Is it legal? She wants to know if it's legal to film, quote, adult educational material where you live.
It sure is.
Thank you, Rose.
We can put it on the local Comcast cable access. Such a great question from a great person.
All right, now we got Ron St. Pierre's got a question. Apparently, he's a guy on the internet who seems to be a well appointed
and calm.
Gentlemanly old fellow. And he says, I have an opening effect called cut in half, in which I maintain that I will cut to a card exactly half the value of the suit of the selected card, which turns out to be the five of hearts. My challenge...
Oh.
What? Seemingly,
oh, I just, I'm thinking.
Seemingly impossibly, I cut to the five and a half of hearts. Question, is the revelation of an obviously gaffed card, does it place suspicion on all the effects that follow? I say yes. I say yes. I think, you know, I have done the three and a half of clubs before. But I always pull that puppy out of a separate box and leave it alone on the table, segregated from all of his friends. Everyone needs to understand he's not a card.
Right, it's just a thing.
Right, it's a card-like thing out of an envelope-like thing. But, you know, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But for my point, I say, Ron, when you start to bust out weird gaffes in the middle of a trick like that, I think it's cool if you want to do it. And I think there's a lot of ways you can make an enjoyable period of entertainment for people with doing that. But I would definitely feel like it does sort of cast the whole elegant, unprepared card magic thing well into suspicion.
I think maybe there's a way to kind of retain the bit and the effect and the gag, but, you know, using a different method of, you know, not introducing a card, but three and a half of something, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty good idea. You know, you mean some kind of way to use the bit without actually going to a playing card.
Yeah, you could have three and a half of anything, three and a half bottles of beer or whatever, you know.
You see, and that's just a sort of offbeat approach that has made Nathan Kranzo famous this whole time.
AK-47, y'all.
I have no response to that.
Kristen Hawk on Facebook wanted to say that she would think it was really cool if I would say she's so cool. So, Kristen Hawk, you're so cool.
Wow. I think we're going to have to reevaluate moving forward into the future the value of reading bits of random content internet.
I agree. I was like halfway through it and I had to commit.
I mean, we're having fun and we're having a wonderful podcast and hopefully we got some good information out today. But I think in the future, I don't know if I trust our social networking friends to help us find the best comments. I mean, you know, especially Rosie Rings there. Rosie the Ringer, so to speak.
Rosie the Ringer. That's a beautiful new name for her. Oh, I just want to know how many people are as excited as you are to go to Tron.
I don't know, you know. I'm going to probably not get this thing out tonight because I'm going to be going to Tron. And I'm hoping probably to release this thing maybe Tuesday, something like that. Maybe a couple days before Christmas. Something like that. Not sure. Shouldn't have even said that, actually, since I don't know what's going to happen. But by the time people hear us, I think they will be tronning out pretty hard. So we'll be able to get some feedback.
It's pretty funny because I overheard my mom say that she's like, yeah, your dad's going to take me to some movie with Jeff Bridges in it. And I was like, well, that was pretty smooth for him to put it to her that way.
Right? Yeah, but maybe she was clever. Maybe he was clever enough and he let her believe it was going to be True Grit, which I'm also going to see.
Yeah, I know.
And I would just... Sounds like you've got a friend who just showed up.
Yeah, people are invading the room all of a sudden. We got it under control. We're back to normal.
Well, Mr. Kranzo, I'm going to take that as a cue that we have had. I mean, look, we've just done a nice, looks like a nice 40-minute podcast here, more or less, 45 minutes. Plenty of time for someone to listen to some good magic talk while they're on the road to Grandma's house. And that was kind of what we wanted to do because both you and I are really blessed and fortunate to be in magic. We get to do what we love and we get to share it with an awful lot of people. And for me, it's really a fun thing to be able to have these conversations and know that there are people out there all over the world a nice select group of them that want to talk about these things and like to hear the way we talk about these things, and it helps them approach their own magic. So, you know, that's why I'm in it. That's why I like to do these things, and I just want to thank you for coming together and talking with me about this stuff here for the holiday.
Oh, my pleasure, man. I think you're right. I agree. We're both lucky that we get to not only get to, teach a lot of magic, but we get to travel and see a lot of magic, and I think that enables us to have some weight when we talk about it. So it's cool. We're lucky, and I'm really excited that I've been able to spend a little bit of time with you over the holidays.
Yeah, man.
even though it's not face to face.
Well, we'll be seeing you next year at a bachelor party, I think.
Yes, but the bachelor party we can't speak about.
No, we can't speak about that now, but there'll be more on that next year.
Right on.
All right, sir. Have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
You too, man. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.